Good morning. So I'm here today to talk about overcoming challenges in wargame design. We're going to address this by going over two styles of wargaming, beginning with manual historical wargame simulations of the style created in Professor Sabin's Conflict Simulation MA course, which I just completed this year. This will be followed by a short examination of some design challenges that present themselves in simulating potential or future conflicts, where the testing of the simulation cannot be accomplished simply by comparing its play and outcome to a historical encounter where the outcome is known. To begin, we'll discuss design challenges in manual historical wargaming. In the style of wargame design, there are several fundamental elements that present themselves as challenges to the designer, including abstracting real events and game mechanics, simplifying for playability, communicating effectively with the player, properly weighing elements as factors of combat resolution, and realistically assessing alternative outcomes. These challenges are all interconnected to some degree, and they occasionally share solutions, but each deserves to be addressed on its own merits for the unique challenges they provide to the wargaming designer. So one of the obvious challenges when converting something as complicated as combat into a tabletop game is translating real combat elements into abstract representations in the game mechanics. The challenge isn't merely finding ways to represent these elements in symbols and gameplay, but finding ways to do so that effectively represent their contribution to the combat and the outcome of the battle. This is a challenge that lies at the heart of several of the following challenges and represents one of the first hurdles you'll deal with when security professionals are playing your games. You're not trying to replicate training in the field, and you shouldn't approach manual wargaming from that perspective. But it is important to emphasize that tabletop games can accurately measure and incorporate all of these real-world combat elements. There are a few common solutions to this problem, including assigning numbers to combat elements so that they can be factored into combat resolution without being visually represented. This obviously requires value judgments as to the degree to which an element affected that combat, which we'll go over in more detail in a few minutes, but it has significant advantages in allowing representation of elements without overloading your game with details. Another solution for abstracting real events into your game mechanics is in providing visual representation of those elements. For elements that must be represented visually, extra counters or map markers are a good way to go about this. When using visual representation, it's extremely important to ensure this is done with clarity and is easy to understand from a player perspective, which we'll go over in more detail in a few minutes. When deciding what to represent visually, it's important to keep in mind that this decision comes with a trade-off, as everything you add to the visuals adds another layer of detail to your rules and to the length of your game's playtime, a trade-off that plays directly into the next design challenge. Attendant to the problem of abstracting combat elements is the problem of simplifying the game down to something that can be learned and played within a reasonable time frame. Obviously, different games will have different goals for play times and complexity, but whether you're shooting for a game that takes 8 hours to learn and a whole day to play, or a game that can be learned and played to completion within 2 hours, it boils down to decisions about what elements to cut in the trade-off between detail and playtime. A game that seeks to portray every single aspect of a battle will inevitably get bogged down in details, and it's easy during the design process to watch your rules spiral out of control from 20 pages to 50 pages to an entire novel. This is not simply a problem for making a game that works, but cutting elements to simplify play and keep the word count of your rules down is effective in creating a game that feels approachable. There are plenty of devotees to this style of wargaming. But if you want to make a game that a wider audience will be willing to play, simplifying increases the approachability of your game from a player perspective. There are several keys to overcoming this challenge. Thorough historical research of the conflict you are modeling is vital to understanding as a game designer what elements can be cut without negatively impacting the realism of your simulation. Ultimately, this will amount to a judgment call on the part of the designer, and it is a decision that benefits quite a bit from seeking peer review of your work. Another solution for simplification is to use visual shorthand, for instance, through depicting terrain types and providing tables players can consult when they're trying to determine what impact the terrain will have on their movement or combat. A third solution is the combination of elements. If you are primarily modeling infantry combat, but you find that armor, artillery, and air power were too significant to realistically cut from the game, you can combine these as a single factor. Add a scale that measures and moves with the game, or a table players can consult to incorporate these elements into combat resolution so the effect is still represented without requiring an entirely separate game mechanic to do so. How to prioritize what is represented in these visual elements or tables is, again, a judgment on the part of the designer, one that should be heavily influenced by the historical research period of your design process. However, this can also be a reflection of what the designer believes are the most important or most interesting elements of a battle, expressing not just seasons of the year or terrain types, but key areas, troop morale, or representation among a population. The choice of what to represent in tables or visually on the board can emphasize a point the designer would like to make about the conflict or incorporate some element not typically included in historical analysis. Of course, it's vital as you simplify the representation of various elements to playtest consistently to determine the functionality of your game mechanics. Since you're usually not trying to write an entire novel to explain your game, and you often can't rely on players to read a novel's worth of rules, communicating your intent with the player can be a significant challenge. This is also one of the most difficult challenges to be aware of during the design process, because the simple fact of the matter is, you already know what you were thinking when you wrote your rules. So you can write an extremely detailed explanation of how combat works and still have someone say, "I don't get it." The most effective solution for this is to include a comprehensive and varied example of play in your rules. This example of play should take the reader through a narrated full player turn at a minimum, and ideally should include more than one instance of combat so you can demonstrate how different combat scenarios should play out. Another solution for communicating effectively with the player is to incentivize the things you want them to do. Imposing constraints on player behavior that force them to act in a certain way requires significant addition of rules and restrictions and lowers player satisfaction and the learning potential of your game. Do not force player actions unless it's necessary. You should be able to motivate players to do what you want through game circumstances. For instance, if the combat you're modeling primarily took place in buildings, you will want players to fight in buildings. However, simply applying a rule that fighting cannot take place in the street is unrealistic and frustrating to players. Rather, you can seek to add combat advantages for one player if combat takes place in a building. That player will seek to occupy buildings, the other will be forced to engage them there. Another solution for this is to spend time during the design process trying to predict player behavior. Approach your game as someone who is completely unfamiliar with it would, and try to predict which actions might look advantageous to them, even if they're not what happened in history. This will allow you to see how your incentivizing rules are working, and to plan for player actions that may need to be modified in order for your game to function. In this way, playtesting on your own is a vital element of wargame design. Another method of communicating effectively with the player can be done through visuals. It's not merely important to make sure elements are present and easy to spot, it's also important to keep your visuals simple and easy to understand at a glance. Overly complicated or unclear visuals will frustrate players and prolong gameplay unnecessarily. On the left here, you can see draft counters that are making two critical mistakes: choosing a color scheme without enough contrast, and loading up the counters with a lot of detail that makes them overly busy, both of which make them extremely difficult to read. On the right, you've got some examples of how to do it well. These are easy to read, differentiated from each other at a glance, and the use of pictures to depict the subjects makes these counters great visual shorthand and simple to use. No visual elements of your game should be adding complexity to the gameplay unless strictly necessary. Visuals should be used instead to streamline the learning and play of your game. There are significant challenges when weighing elements as factors of combat resolution. Designers need to make mathematical determinations as to how combat will be resolved, choose methods of resolution that do not overcomplicate the game while still accurately capturing combat factors, and balance the incorporation of combat factors in a way that allows combat to progress accurately and functionally. There are several ways to approach combat resolution, including the use of points or ratios in combat values, or column shifts in a combat table. Ultimately, this choice falls on the preference of the designer. It's important to choose an approach that is functional, but does not raise the complexity of the game to a level that may frustrate players. Another solution for weighing factors in combat can be in the determination of victory states, for which there are two common approaches. Victory points can be awarded throughout gameplay and then added to determine final scores, with victory going to the higher score. The designer may also choose victory conditions that must be met at the end of the final turn, which may include the occupation of key areas or the destruction of a certain number of enemy counters. This design choice may hinge on what is easiest for gameplay, but it can also be determined by what the designer judges as having been most important for the battle in question, or by designer efforts to encourage player behavior that mimics the unit movement or command decisions that happened historically. Properly balancing your combat values is essential for functionality and presents two specific challenges. You may find that in applying certain combat factors to combat scores, you have accidentally balanced everything perfectly and made combat impossible by allowing both forces to essentially cancel each other out. There is also a danger in weighing one side too heavily, making engaging in combat for one player doomed to failure, which will motivate player behavior that is completely unrealistic. Properly balancing your combat values actually involves building in imbalances so that players can find combat scenarios that will give them a reasonable chance of success and thereby be willing to engage in combat. Here you can see an example of factors of combat through column shifts, applying advantages or disadvantages to combat based on where it is taking place or how much of the game board has been occupied. Balancing your combat factors does not have to be constant either. You can build mechanics into your game that allow one player to gain incremental advantages throughout gameplay, increasing their combat power turn by turn if this accurately depicts what happened in the battle you're simulating. Once you've determined a balance of combat factors, playtesting is again vital to determining the functionality of this part of your game. No matter how thorough you've been in balancing your combat factors, someone playtesting your game is going to find the one combat scenario you didn't plan for, do it, and then point out that your rules don't make sense. Similarly, if you find during playtesting that you've allowed 6 turns for the game, but one side consistently eliminates the other on turn 2, you've definitely mishandled combat resolution. Whether your game is modeling a historical battle or a future conflict, you will find that unpredictable player behavior will create scenarios you did not plan for during the design process. However, you can hedge against this and minimize the problem. Your historical research and analysis will be the cornerstone of the solutions for this. Understanding contributing factors to the outcome of the battle you are modeling and the force capabilities involved will allow you to consider realistic alternative outcomes during your design process. Having predicted ways the battle may change or evolve that are still in keeping with realistic possibilities will allow you to predict the ways players may challenge the parameters and restrictions of your game. Once you have devoted the time to assessing alternative outcomes on your own, playtesting will become vital to addressing this problem. As we've discussed, players are great at doing things you would never have thought to do and can often stumble on inconsistencies or outright game-breaking issues in your rules. When you find there are unrealistic possibilities that your rules allow, it's imperative to make changes to eliminate them. A good example of this can be found in the Stalingrad game that I designed this year, which you can see up on the slide. There's a pretty small difference between these two game boards, but it wound up being the difference between a functional and a non-functional game. During playtesting, we discovered there was a loophole in the rules that allowed the Soviet player to essentially win every time, no matter what the German player did, because I had not restricted where along the western bank of the Volga the Soviet player could land their replacements. If the Soviet player spotted this detail, it meant the German player could never achieve the victory conditions I had written for my rules. Picking those 2 red hexes and designating them as landing hexes for arriving Soviet replacements made achieving victory possible for both sides, which is fundamental to functionality. So I've said it a few times, but I really can't say it enough. Playtesting is the most important tool you have for overcoming design challenges in wargaming. An illustrative example of significant changes over drafts via playtesting can be seen in this year's Conflict Simulation MA course's own Fog on the Somme, a hex encounter simulation covering the first 10 days of Operation Michael's air-ground battle in March of 1918, created by James Halstead. James graciously agreed to let me show a few draft iterations of his game board to illuminate the design process. What you're seeing here is draft 1, the very first iteration that had not yet been playtested. These are the next draft versions, where you can see various game mechanics being tested in play and clearly being passed off or changed, as it was discovered they did not work. Something as simple as realizing you have too many hexes and your players can't engage each other because they're wasting multiple turns just getting into combat range can prompt some pretty dramatic revising of the most basic elements of your board. The final version is dramatically different from the first draft. I was involved in quite a bit of the playtesting for this game, and I watched major combat elements get cut entirely, while major revisions were imposed on the game map and rules to functionally incorporate combat elements that James had determined to be vital for an accurate representation of the battle. The end result is an excellent hex encounter simulation and a great example of overcoming challenges in wargame design. So there are obviously challenges in wargaming design that we won't have time to cover in this presentation, and given the complexity and specificity of the wargame design process, I have no doubt the challenges I've covered here may manifest in ways that I didn't account for in your own design experience. But here you'll see summarized some good common solutions for making a functional and analytically valuable historical wargame simulation. Comprehensive historical research, visual shorthand and tables, numerical combat values for single or combined elements, comprehensive examples of play, incentivized rather than forced player actions, choosing a method of combat resolution that doesn't add too much complexity, and balancing combat factors to prevent gridlock or total domination by one player will all help you deal with common challenges in design for this type of wargaming. And of course, playtest every chance you get. I do not have a similarly extensive experience in this area, however, I did have the privilege of working as staff on the development, testing, or execution of several future conflict simulations this year. Challenges identified during those processes were fairly varied, as they tend to be related to specific elements of the scenario being played, but there were a few that were common to all simulations I worked on. These included, but were not limited to, prioritizing outcomes versus realism, modeling human behavior, pushback on scenarios, and details as constraints versus details as guidance. We'll discuss a few solutions that work to address these issues. In prioritizing outcomes versus realism, the main solution is to determine what it is the game is attempting to test or analyze, and to generate a scenario that actually tests it. As a part of doing so, the incorporation of subject matter experts is vital. Particularly in modeling future conflicts, it's not possible as it is with historical simulations to know what did happen and use it as a benchmark for accuracy, so accurately modeling force capabilities and leadership roles is key for realism. However, it is important to note that realism is not necessarily the goal for every aspect of a future conflict scenario. If the goal is to model how a nuclear exchange might play out, it may be necessary to design a scenario that takes for granted the escalation of tensions between two nations in order to make a nuclear exchange possible. This contrived escalation of tensions does not render the resulting simulated nuclear exchange devoid of analytic value. Rather, provided force capabilities and leadership decisions are accurately modeled through consultation with subject matter experts, these simulations can provide invaluable insights into the decision-making processes and human behavior that can lead experts to make world-altering decisions. The value of understanding that process cannot be overstated in a world where these decisions cannot be ruled out. The challenge of modeling human behavior accurately is typically addressed by communicating clearly what roles the players are meant to be simulating and instructing them to accurately model those roles. The idea isn't to act in the game scenario as you would act, but to embody the role you've been assigned and act as the person holding that position typically would, be it White House chief of staff or a terrorist cell leader. Act as your role implies should be consistently emphasized to players. Along with this, thoroughly explaining the goals of your game can assist in dealing with pushback from players who may take issue with the starting scenario. If your scenario involves the assumed escalation of tensions to measure a possible nuclear exchange, it is important to keep the focus in gameplay on mapping the decisions that led to the exchange, rather than examining every detail of the starting scenario. When dealing with details as constraints versus guidance, playtesting is vital to finding out where the gaps are, and as with historical wargaming, players testing your scenario will always find things you missed. A good example of this took place during testing of a future conflict simulation, as one team decided to cut off gas to a neighboring country. That team played through a whole other turn before someone on the team thought to ask what time of year it was, pointing out that cutting off gas would have significantly different impacts if it was winter or summer, and therefore would lead to significantly different results in terms of leverage. An inquiry to the control team found that no one knew what time of year it was, as that detail had not been accounted for in the design process. Seemingly inconsequential details during the design phase may wind up having a significant impact on player decisions and the outcomes of those decisions. Wargame creation seems immensely complex, but it is achievable for anyone who sets their mind to it. When designing any type of wargame, keep in mind that things that are not working are merely an opportunity for you to get it right the next time. You'll have to go down a few blind alleys to reach success, but don't get discouraged, and playtest your game every chance you get.